It is Friday, October 25th, 2024. I'm Charlie Shine, and reading the front pages of the Hartford Current on the New York Times with me today is Bill Murphy. We're going to start by taking a look at the front page pictures on the New York Times and then jump over to Bill and get a look at the pictures in the front page of the Hartford Current and get our first story. So, taking a look at the pictures in the front page of the Times, we have a large one. One championship for all. The WNBA champion Liberty was honored along the Canyon of Heroes on Broadway. The only third time a women's team has been granted that privilege. And that story actually is in the sports section. But we have the picture itself, a bunch of young girls celebrating the victory of the New York Liberty. And young women of color actually standing there screaming, taking selfies. It's great. Anyways, we move on down right below the fold. We have a picture of Shrek. No, not the Disney character. This is a rare Pozolsky's horse was rescued from in Aurora, Colorado, from the equine slaughter pipeline. We're going to take a closer look at that story. And he looks like a mule, but he's not. Anyway, more on that in just a little bit as we move on down. Final picture on the front page of the Times, from the business section, Boeing workers reject PAC. The union's vote hours after the company reported a $6.1 billion loss extends a nearly six-week-long strike. The picture itself is we have some Boeing workers clapping after the vote decision. And that's it for the pictures on the front page of the New York Times. And we go to Bill for the pictures on the front page of the Current and our first story. Hello, Bill.
Hello, Charlie. There are three pictures, two of them related. The largest one is, I'm going to read the caption first. Scott Pearson of Monroe delivers a box of 68,000 signatures that were collected through a change.org petition to cease the public benefit changes on the electric bill, and he's giving these boxes to Alex Cunningham, a member of Governor Ned Lamont's staff. That happened on Thursday, and Mr. Pearson has the box in his hand, and next to him, receiving one of the signatures, one of the papers with the signature on it, is Mr. Cunningham, the member of Governor Ned Lamont's staff. Related to that, a little bit below, there's a picture of a lady named Nancy Stamier of Middlebury, and she is standing behind a desk. There's a Channel 8 microphone in front of her, and she is showing her electric bill during a press conference at the Legislative Office Building before the signatures were delivered. And we're going to have a story on that. I believe it'll be after the weather. And the other story, another picture, we're not going to have a story on this, but just to mention that there's a picture of a gas pump station in Austin, Texas. And it says here that gas costs less than $3 a gallon in many states. So it's really fallen quite a bit over the last year or so. Again, we're not going to have a story on that. And I will start with this first story. It's from the World of Nations section of the Current. Vice President Kamala Harris is enlisting some of her most high-profile surrogates in the closing days of the campaign, hoping those names will help energize her supporters to vote early in the 2024 election. On Thursday, Harris headlined a Georgia rally that included a performance by Bruce Springsteen, whose career spans over five decades, and an appearance by former President Barack Obama, still one of the biggest names in Democratic politics. Pop superstar Beyoncé will appear Friday with Harris at a rally in Houston about abortion rights, according to two people briefed on the plans, adding another gold-plated name to the list of celebrities who have thrown their support behind the vice president, including Taylor Swift, Oprah Winfrey, and Robert De Niro. Beyonce, a Houston native, is one of the most commercially successful musicians of the 21st century and has hundreds of millions of followers on social media, including many black voters and younger Americans. Her music has already become familiar at Harris's large campaign rallies. The vice president enters and exits the stage to Freedom, a song from Beyonce's 2016 album Lemonade. It was not immediately clear if Beyonce planned to endorse Harris on Friday, something Democrats had long hoped for, but her appearance, which was earlier reported by the Washington Post, will be seen as a clear show of support. Country music legend Willie Nelson will also attend the rally. Harris is speaking in Houston to highlight Texas' almost total abortion ban and to castigate former President Donald Trump, who appointed three of the Supreme Court justices who helped overturn Roe v. Wade. She has made the concept of freedom a major theme of her run for the White House, arguing that Democrats embody that ideal far more than do Republicans, who have passed a series of abortion bans in conservative states. This summer, Beyonce granted permission to the Harris campaign to use freedom, a hard-charging anthem of empowerment, according to CNN. Between Beyonce and Swift, who endorsed Harris minutes after her debate against Trump in September, the vice president now has the backing of two of the world's most popular musicians who carry particular influence with younger people. President Joe Biden was struggling badly with young voters, a key part of his coalition in 2020, before he dropped out of the race in July. Polls showed, since becoming the Democratic Party's nominee, Harris has made significant progress in recouping their support. Charlie?
An Israeli town on Lebanon's border worries for its future. This from the international section of the New York Times. Metula, Israel, once a picturesque Israeli mountain resort with panoramic views into Lebanon, Metula is now off limits to civilian, under fire for months from Hezbollah's rockets and missiles. Every other house has by now been damaged or lies in ruins. Over the past year of fighting, it has been one of the hardest-hit places in Israel. More than a century old and a storied symbol of early pioneering Zionism, Metula, a pastoral border community in Israel's northernmost town, juts upward like a finger into Lebanon, which surrounds it on three sides. The roughly 2,500 residents of Metula were officially evacuated a year ago for the first time since the establishment of the Israeli state in 1948. Now, even as Israeli ground forces pursue Hezbollah's fighters in southern Lebanon, Metula's future is in question. 30% of the evacuees do not intend to return, whatever the outcome of the war, according to the town's mayor, David Zulai. Those who have gone for good, he says, include many of the families with young children. We call it an enclave, encircled to the north and east and west by Lebanon, he said, adding that up to 90% of the houses were exposed within direct line of sight from the Lebanese villages across the border. One of them, Kafir Kila, is less than half a mile away as the crow flies. There are neighborhoods even we don't go into, he said, referring to the two dozen or so members of Metula's armed civil response team who have stayed behind to guard the town, along with a couple of essential council workers and an influx of soldiers. On a recent weekday in mid-October, less than 2 weeks after Israel began an invasion of southern Lebanon, the Israeli military allowed a small group of journalists access to Metula inside what it's declared a closed military zone for a rare glimpse of the damage and the challenges facing the town. Military officials accompanied the group most of the time, but few restrictions were imposed. Riding up the winding road to Metula from the mostly abandoned city of Kiryat Shemona, Mr. Azulai cautioned against fastening seatbelts to allow for a quicker exit in the event of a rocket attack. His assault rifle lay against a passenger seat. Israel and Hezbollah, the heavily armed Lebanese Shiite group backed by Iran, last fought a war in 2006, which was followed by about 17 years of a mostly tense quiet along the frontier. But residents of the Israeli border communities say that they had long lived with a sense of foreboding. They say that they knew they were being watched, having seen people they suspected of being Hezbollah operatives coming up to the border fence and monitoring them. For years, they had been complaining of strange jigging sounds in the night. In 2018, the Israeli military said it exposed several Hezbollah tunnels running under the border, including at least one leading to Matula from the village of Kafir Kila. Bill.
Thank you, Charlie. Another story from the World and Nations section of The Current from Washington. Russia helped amplify and spread false and misleading internet claims about recent hurricanes in the United States and the federal government's response, part of a wider effort by the Kremlin to manipulate America's political discourse before the presidential election, new research shows. The content spread by Russian state media and networks of social media accounts and websites criticizes the federal response to Hurricanes Helene and Milton, exploiting legitimate concerns about the recovery effort in an attempt to paint American leaders as incompetent and corrupt, according to research from the Institute for Strategic Dialogue. The London-based organization tracks disinformation and online extremism. In some cases, the claims about the storms include fake images created using artificial intelligence, such as a photo depicting scenes of devastating flooding at Disney World that never happened, researchers say. The approach is consistent with the Kremlin's long-standing practice of identifying legitimate debates and contentious issues in the U.S. and then exploiting them. Previous disinformation campaigns have harnessed debates about immigration, racism, crime, and the economy in an effort to portray the U.S. as corrupt, violent, and unjust. U.S. intelligence officials and private tech companies say Russian activity has increased sharply before the November 5th election as Moscow tries to capitalize on an opportunity to undermine its chief global adversary. By seizing on real concerns about disaster recovery, Russia's disinformation agencies can worm their way into U.S. discourse using hot-button issues to undermine Americans' trust in their government and each other. These are not situations that foreign actors are creating, said Melanie Smith, director of research at ISD. They're simply pouring gasoline on fires that already exist. The content identified by ISD included English language posts, obviously meant for Americans, as well as Russian language propaganda intended for domestic audiences. Much of the disinformation took aim at the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Democratic administration of Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris. She is her party's nominee in the White House race against former President Donald Trump. Charlie?
Mideast peace talks to resume in Qatar. Israeli and American negotiators are scheduled to return to Qatar over the weekend in an effort to revive ceasefire talks between Israel and Hamas, the Israeli Prime Minister's office said on Thursday. But the announcement came amid new Israeli bombardment both in the Gaza Strip and in Lebanon on Thursday, and uncertainty from U.S. and Qatari officials about whether Hamas might soon rejoin the talks. We haven't really determined whether Hamas is prepared to engage, the Secretary of State Anthony J. Blinken, in the Qatar capital. The fundamental question is Hamas serious? Mr. Blinken met for an hour with Mohammed bin Abdulrahman Al Thani, Qatar's prime minister and foreign minister, discussing how to end the wars in Gaza and Lebanon. Appearing together afterwards at a news conference, they said that they had no indication that Hamas was more willing to negotiate since Israel killed its leader, Yahya Sinwar, last week. The office of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel said that David Barnea, the head of the country's Mossad Foreign Intelligence Service, would depart on Sunday to a meeting in Doha with Mr. Al Thani and William J. Burns, the director of the CIA. Before leaving Qatar for London on Thursday, Mr. Blinken announced that the United States would provide an additional $135 million in humanitarian assistance for Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank, as well as the region, and said that the current humanitarian crisis in Gaza was especially urgent with winter approaching. Video distributed by multiple news agencies from outside a bakery in the city of Khan Yunis in southern Gaza spoke to the desperation of the enclave, showing a sea of grasping hands as scuffles broke out for food. This week, the main emergency service in Gaza ceased all rescue operations in the northern part of the territory amid a renewed Israeli offensive there. The Israeli military, which says it is trying to eliminate a regrouped Hamas presence in the north, has killed scores of people there in recent days. Roughly 400,000 people remain in northern Gaza, according to the United Nations, and many have been trapped in their ruined neighborhoods by Israeli airstrikes. Philippe Lanzari, the head of the main UN aid agency for Palestinians, issued a particularly stark assessment of the situation on Tuesday, writing in a social media post that in northern Gaza, people are just waiting to die. That's quote unquote. Israeli strikes continued on Thursday across Gaza, where Israel's at war with Hamas and Lebanon, where it is battling Hezbollah. The Israeli military said it had struck the Hamas command center inside a compound formerly used as a school in central Gaza. Video obtained by the Reuters news agency taken after the strike shows injured people, including children, at the compound, which has been housing displaced Palestinians. Bill.
Thank you, Charlie. One more story from the World and Nation section of The Current is from Washington. Former President Donald Trump has spent much of the presidential campaign brainstorming new and sometimes untested ways to cut taxes. In the election's final stretch, he raised the possibility of going even further, eliminating income taxes entirely. During a Fox News segment Monday, Trump took questions at a barbershop in New York City. When asked if the United States could potentially end all federal taxation, Trump said the country could return to the economic policies in the late 19th century when there was no federal income tax. It had all tariffs. It didn't have an income tax, Trump said. Now we have income taxes, and we have people that are dying. They're paying tax, and they don't have the money to pay the tax. In June, Trump floated the idea of replacing federal revenue from income taxes with money received from tariffs. Trump has not provided specific details of how that would work, and it is unclear if he wants to eliminate all federal taxes, including corporate income taxes and payroll taxes, or only end the individual income tax. Either way, liberal and conservative experts have dismissed his idea as mathematically impossible and economically destructive. Even if Republicans control Congress, lawmakers are unlikely to dismantle the income tax system, yet Trump's combination of tax cuts and tariff increases has been central to his political pitch. There is a way, if what I'm planning comes out, Trump said, of ending income taxes. Replacing income taxes with tariffs would reverse the progressivity of the tax system in the United States. In general, income taxes are progressive, meaning that Americans with more income pay a higher tax rate. Tariffs, which impose a tax on products imported into the United States, are regressive.